I want to call this meeting to order. You all have an agenda on your desk. And also, Kevin, you presented everyone with the list of OTRs and what has happened with all of that.
Yep.
Right? So there was a request that some people had. I want to start out. You'll notice at the top it says Sheriff's Office, Lezen, OTR 077 is the sponsor of this item, and she is not here at this point. But I have a request from the chair of the legislature to invite Judge Rowley to the microphone for a short statement about the program day reporting. Judge, if you want to come to the microphone, you're on.
I love the timeliness of this. I actually don't have anything to say. I just wanted to make myself available if there's any questions. I really am reluctant to get in the middle of your business, but I do have the experience that I have and the a lot of private opinions, very few public opinions, but if there's any questions about the programs that end up getting filled up because of the orders that I issue, I would be happy to respond to any of those questions.
Martha.
Thank you, Judge, for coming. I understand. I spoke with Judge Rossiter today, and she's right now on her way back from Delaware, so she couldn't be here. But I believe she spoke with you, Judge. And,
yes, we did exchange. Right?
I wonder if she had anything to add. Appreciate the letter that you sent. But she's got another kind of experience, long experience with misdemeanor treatment court and with the day reporting program. So was there anything you were able to add from talking to Judge Rossiter?
Yeah, let me just make clear that, we're not trying to compare any program with any other program. We're talking about what happens with the work that we do, and I think both Judge Rossiter and I have this similar experience that we rely in particular day in and day out on day reporting so that we have a place to put people other than in the county jail, and that's the way it's utilized. And I think as my letter stated, I think Judge Rossiter would echo that we get two important things out of the program. One is we know where people are, and we know if they're not where they're supposed to be. And secondly, we get kind of a proving ground in between time of someone being arrested, and most of those people will ultimately be convicted of something. By the time of sentencing, we have a pretty good sense whether there's a community-based supervision option that makes sense or whether it's not going to happen. And a number of people who may not look so good on day one look better 3 months later, having worked on their GED or participated in some other aspect of day reporting. So it does provide those two, I think, very important pieces for us.
Dooley.
I apologize. I have Martha's voice now.
I apologize.
I read your letter with interest, and as a good lawyer, you were careful with your words. And you said something to the effect of if the program should become inadequate, you would have to think seriously about your use of it or something like that. And, of course, you didn't define what inadequate meant. And I'm not sure you're going to tell us that now, but you are probably aware of the cuts that were proposed in the program. And I can tell you that I think it's borderline when it gets cut a lot. And I wondered if you can comment at all on the extent or how many hours maybe a day make it.
Sure.
Or what the basic programs are that you really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all are aware of that danger where we take something that is fully functional, and then we try to see where we can trim it down and still retain its, its character. At some point, it loses its character. I can't do that with you for the day reporting program. I do think that it may end up being useful only for the first component of being a place that I know that people at least every day are getting up, checking in, they're being breath tested, and they're being required to do certain things for a certain period of time, and that gives me enough confidence that I can try that route rather than setting bail or remanding to the county jail. I do think that we may be at the point where the second point about really giving people an opportunity to do something while the heat is on, which is a time when most of us actually pay attention, to really take advantage of the mental health counseling, the substance abuse counseling, and the alcohol, education and employment piece. I don't even know the details of where the trimming is happening, but I know that the main emphasis has been on the employment and education piece. But sometimes, for some of these folks, that's just not enough. If they're not clean and sober, if they're not seeing the way their behavior makes it impossible to get employed, if they're not able to pay attention enough to even take a GED program, if you don't have all those pieces, you're not going to have as much success. So we're really talking about, a robust program, being able to do the most good. Something less than that, it's going to do less good. That's all there is to it. But I can't weigh the choices you have to weigh.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for the judge? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
First item on the agenda is the Sheriff's Office. Leslin is not in the room. I want to jump to OAR addition target, 11,600. It's new, and it's sponsored by Julie Kiefer.
Well, I believe that was an alternative to what Leslin had put in, which was a lower amount of 6,000, which you acted on when I wasn't here. So that makes this probably not worth moving, although I had a higher number in mind because I thought it was important that the staff remain at 40 hours a week. My understanding is that staff hours were cut in order for them to still make a livable wage per hour, which OAR had finally reached after many years. And with increased use of their services, to have staff hours cut below 40 hours a week doesn't make sense to me. But before I move something, I need to ask Deborah Dietrich whether the 6,000 that was moved will allow staff to be 40 hours a week. I'm not sure.
And she's here.
Dooley, we're at 35 hours a week is our work week. And last January and February, we reduced those hours to 32 hours a week. So I want to just make clear that we're not a 40-hour week
that's operation. My mistake. I'm sorry.
That's fine. 6,000, I'm still running the numbers. What we've done is in January of this January, we had 4.6 FTEs. We had two people leave, and we replaced only one of those. So we've reduced staffing to 3.6. The 6,000, I'm still crunching the numbers. I think we may have to reduce hours still by one or two. It depends a little bit. We're so close to the bone, so much of it's personnel, that I just got what our health insurance premiums are going to be, and it may be that we're going to have to, at some point of the year, reduce hours. But the 6,000 will get us at least to the first part of the year without reducing hours below 35 for 3.6 FTEs.
So, since after we have a public hearing on the budget, there's still an opportunity to make small changes if they seem really important. I guess when you finish crunching your numbers, I'd like to know how they turn out. So I'd like to make a different motion now, if I may, Jim, and that has to do with the bail fund. When we had the presentation from OAR, we heard how the bail fund hasn't really been increased by the county for several years. And the impression I got at the presentation was that the costs per bail are going up, the average cost, And since anyone that OAR serves by having them make bail means we save money by not having someone in jail, I think it's reasonable to increase the bail fund a certain amount, and I guess pulling it out of thin air, I will move $5,000 increase in target.
Is there a second? Well, let me point out this is not on the list.
That's right, but it's under OAR, and she's up here.
Comment.
Can you tell us, please,
Carol?
There a page number in our main book where OAR is listed? What's the page number in our main book, then, where... Does anybody know?
They did not ask for any OTRs.
No. Yeah, I understand that, but we probably have numbers in our...
Their main budget is on page 191.
Martha, go ahead.
So you said 5,000 in target. I hate to ask you to repeat something.
That's what I said. It's a number I just pulled out of the air. I'm not sure what the best number would be, but the concept is there.
My understanding...
Is it one time or target?
I said target.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. Lord.
You know, my understanding is that we put a couple of chunks of money, I think $10,000 twice, but not as target funding, kind of. When we got information that the bail fund was low, we put some new money in. So I'm not sure target is the right thing to do. I guess I'd like, let me ask Deb. when the bail fund gets too low, then you end up kind of reducing the categories of people you can consider helping. And you sort of go... I think what you usually do is that you start at the top and you'll say, well we're not going to do that $2,000 bail because that's one person compared to four people at 500 or something. Right? Could you tell us where your bail fund stands right now and how healthy is it?
We were just there about a month ago, so our bail fund, we went into the negative. We have a line of credit, and so we went into the negative on our line of credit about $500 4 to 5 weeks ago. Since then, we have gotten a number of large returns, and our bail fund today stands at about $8,000. I ran the numbers today because I've been talking about bail inflation without really hard numbers on it, and I finally crunched the numbers. And since 2007, the average bail has increased from $663 to $877. That's an average bail, you know, all of them. If figuring 60 bails a year, though, it's not much per individual bail, but it means that there's $13,000 more for the same number of bails required in 2010 as compared to 2007. So we didn't come to you. We didn't come to you with any OTRs because we know what a hard year you're facing. But we will have to, you know, reduce the number of bails that we do, depending on it. We can come back to you and ask you for more because we just got these, you know, we're up to 8,000, but that's not a lot of money when the bails are around 1,500, 2,000 a bail.
Frank.
I think based a little bit, if I heard Deb correctly, part of the fund has been replenished because of some recent collections. Is this, because things are so tight, first let me ask Dooley a question. Dooley, you pulled the $11,600 item?
Yes.
Yes. So we're talking about an item that's not on our page, the $5,000. This seems to me to be a perfect example of why we have a contingency fund. That if in the event that there's a need, and with all due respect to OAR, sometimes the bails run high, and they don't know what to expect. But if there's a somewhat of an emergency, I think we're open to receiving a request at the time that there's that emergency, and that's particular. That is really what the contingent fund is for. So I'm a little bit concerned if we add this, as Martha said, to target. Or even if we do it as a one-time, which reduces our delicate fund balance right now, delicately balanced fund balance. I would be predisposed to consider it as a contingent item at the appropriate time.
Peter had his hand up first, then Mike.
Debbie, I'm a little bit confused here. I'm just wondering if everybody, if no one forfeits bail, then we never ever lose anything. So how much do we lose per year on the average in bail funds?
I don't have an exact number, but we do lose some money. We lose about, it's ranged from $1,800 to $5,200 a year out of money that's cycling 60 times. I mean, there's tens of thousands of dollars cycling through the system.
Okay, well, has this been I mean, it seems to me that's the right thing to have in the target, is an amount to replenish the fund when people forfeit it.
Okay, I you know, we hope people don't forfeit, but we have had some forfeiture. We can't predict that amount.
And secondly, when they do forfeit, where does the money go? It just goes to the county, right?
No. In fact, that's an issue that Dave Squires and I spoke of briefly a couple years ago. Sometimes the forfeitures, the town justices keep the forfeitures at the town level.
May I make a comment here? This is $5,000 to target. It's not on the agenda. I don't think we're going to change any minds here, and I would really like to get a vote on this one way or another.
Based on what I just heard Deborah say, I think $2,000 in target money would be appropriate for us to add.
So now the request is $7,000.
No, $2,000 instead of $5,000. I pulled $5,000 out of the air. I really didn't know.
So it's plus $2,000.
So plus $2,000 as a target.
Minutes, it could be back with
if
zero.
That's agreeable with.
Okay. All in favor?
Wait a minute.
Yes, Mike.
Have we had a motion put forward?
Yeah, we have $5,000. And we have a second. And this is an amendment, I guess, or a change?
If that's allowed, yes.
Does the seconder think that's friendly? So it's $2,000 now.
So restate what we're doing, please.
We are voting $2,000 as target for OAR bail fund.
With the understanding from Deborah Dietrich that they do have leakage every year, she said between $1,800 and $5,600.
Martha.
I'm going to support this. It's a small amount that would stabilize this program and reduce a lot of, you know, if they have to decide when to come or whether to come to the contingent fund, to us for contingent fund, that's a lot of churn for $2,000. I think it's a reasonable thing to do.
All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. All opposed. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. OTR 077 is Sheriff's Office reduction from target minus $75,647, which I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I was just going to move
which
it.
Which is
to
one deputy out of two.
I'm not sure what it is. It's just half the amount that the county administrator was recommending. So I'm moving a reduction of $75,647 out of OTR 77.
Is there a second? Discussion. Frank.
Yeah, I see Peter, the sheriff, sitting in the back. Is it appropriate to ask him what the effect might be if
it is absolutely appropriate.
Peter, can you?
That money is to maintain current staffing levels. If you reduce it, you would be reducing one deputy sheriff's position. This is not an add-on. They're not new positions. That money is to maintain based on the 7-point-some-odd% cut we had to make. We didn't put everything that we were cut back on the table. We put autos and this, and we put one, the clerical position that the county administrator did not recommend, so that's gone at this moment. So this is a deputy sheriff. If you pass this motion, it means there'll be one less deputy sheriff working come January 1.
Thank you.
Kathy and then Mike.
Thank you. I seconded this because, as everybody's aware, many of our core duties and responsibilities are under not just increased scrutiny and increased pressure, but incredible pressures and scrutiny right now. I think it's important that we recognize that every aspect of county government is under pressure right now. And this is one, as a core duty and responsibility, as are so many that we're looking at, that we also need to examine.
When I ran for election a year ago, I talked to a lot of people about hard times and what they'd like to see, and the theme I talked about and heard from them was getting back to basics. In my district, which is a rural district, I don't think there's anything more basic than police service for public safety. To reduce the sheriff's office, we're not talking, as the sheriff just told us, about adding someone. We're talking about keeping the same number of deputies, I think would hurt the rural areas, and I can't support it.
Peter?
I won't support this either. From my vantage point, which is not a rural area, but the suburban area, the town of Ithaca, when I've gone around to neighborhood meetings and talked to people, the thing that I hear most, believe it or not, is speeding. And I have come to believe that we do not adequately enforce speed limits. People ask us to change the speed limits, and we often try to get the state to do that, and we do it. But without enforcement, you can put up whatever you want, and you won't make a big effect in speeding. So I feel strongly that this is a core service that we're – it's not that we're doing well and we're considering reducing it. This particular core service, I think we do not do at a minimum level that I think we should.
Anyone else? Dooley?
Well, I won't support this at this time, but I hope that public safety in the next year, and I hope Peter as sheriff, if he continues, will seriously look at having road patrol assigned in three zones instead of four, because I think that may enable us to lower the number of deputies we fund.
Leslin,
can I put that theory to rest?
No.
There are four zones set up by the New York State Police. The entire state of New York is mapped out in zones. And in Tompkins County, there are four zones as mapped out by the New York State Police, as we've signed on with the closest car concept with the state police and with all the municipal police agencies here in the county. We don't always staff four zones. There are many days, evenings, and overnights where there are only three deputies working, and one deputy covers two zones. This is not a question of having four zones and putting four people in a slot every single shift. That simply doesn't happen. I wish that would happen, especially to alleviate some of the speeding issues that Peter speaks of and other complaints we get from the community and the citizens. But the bottom line is we don't have four people working four zones a majority of the time.
Leslin and then Brian.
So I find it rather ironic, you know, that people are talking about core services, and just last week we're having this conversation about whether we're dealing with children who are starving or children who are facing entry into the juvenile justice system or anything else, and those in rise to the occasion of being core services. I frankly don't care where the $75,647 comes from out of the budget. My motion is just to reduce $75,647. I see the county administrator and the request from the sheriff was to restore two deputy positions. So potentially that can come from somewhere. I look at everybody's budget, not just the sheriff, and most people in places where there's money taken out are attributing a lot of that to personnel cost and don't want to lay folks off, don't want to get rid of those positions. And I feel the same way about this. It's like, is there someplace else where $75,000 can be taken from, as opposed to we have to get rid of one deputy? I don't know, but it's just my thought and my comments.
Brian?
Yeah, I actually understand why Leslin would come up with the solution she came up with. That being said, obviously, you know, I think, Peter, you know where my heart is as far as law enforcement. That would be one of the very last things to be cut. So I will not favor I will not agree with this. However, I know that this year we spent a whole lot of money getting the new CAD system on board, and one of the tools for that new CAD system will be kind of a staffing tool using data as far as crimes, where they occur, when they occur, that sort of stuff. And we may be able to use some of that stuff by this time next year, and we'll see where we're at, because I don't think next year is going to be any better and quite possibly worse than it is this year. So
I would agree with you that the software will help us, although I'm not sure in the short amount of time we're going to have real good data. But keep in mind, we're going from 4 clerks to 3 clerks to start this whole system with. We already had to eliminate one position in the sheriff's office this year. Lady retired in July. We haven't replaced the position. I asked for it. The county administrator said, no, I haven't seen anybody here bring forward a resolution. And when I did my presentation, I talked about that. So we're giving up positions. We did not ask for everything back in our budget. I think that needs to be an important point that needs to be made clear to everybody, because we've cut to the bone wherever we can cut. I think in our budget we have enough money for 2.5 cars or something like that. If you want to cut all the cars, go ahead. But, you know, the following year we're gonna be into a situation where it gets worse. You know, this is a substantial reduction this year in the amount of cars, and it's a substantial reduction from last year to this year for training, for supplies, and for everything else. So we're at the point, like I had mentioned last year, and I did earlier this year in my presentation, where we're going to have to cut core services if you're going to keep across-the-board cutting in our agency. So I just want to make sure that you understand how crucial it is and how thin we are right now.
Carol.
Yeah, my question might be for the county administrator. We've asked all of our departments to make cuts, and I understand, and it's really been really painful, and for all of you in the room who haven't heard me say this before, any of the things, there's nothing here that isn't important that we've got that's coming to us tonight, but we also can't afford to do all of it. I'm looking at the chart of what and the summary numbers of what our different departments have had to do, and I'm noticing that the sheriff's office have a requested budget of $4,135,136,000. The tentative budget included $4,044,000.
Carol, what's the question?
My question is, what percentage cut? Do you know offhand what percentage cut they ended up taking? It just looks to me like it's a smaller percentage when you consider that it's a $4 million budget. I know it's painful to cut, but I'm not sure that it's as significant a cut as some of the others that have a big discrepancy.
Could you let him answer the question?
I'm not sure I can answer that question. I'm not sure that I have that percentage cut. You're looking for the bottom line percentage cut that's
I guess
office.
It would be the difference between the $4,044,000 that you were recommending and the $4,135,000. Right. That was requested.
Well, and even that understates it, because as the sheriff has said, he did agree. I mean, he didn't ask for everything back that he cut to make the 6.9% reduction. So that does give you an indication of what the cut is. It may slightly understate that, though. Now, Peter, I don't know if you've got any more details than I do.
I don't have any more numbers than that, but that is the point. It's what we did last year. We made a lot of cuts. We didn't ask for it all back. We've made more cuts this year at your request, and we didn't ask for all of it back. We're just down to the basic of core services. We've already cut back in 2010 services that we do, and we're not intending to do those same services again in 2011. And we're at the point where there isn't any fluff. You know, it means we're going to cut back on community events and interactions with community. We've already dropped some of that this year. It means we're going to drop more next year if you cut more money, because there's nothing left to cut. The fuel budget is right on the bottom line. Everything is running right on the end. We cut overtime for this year in the 2010 budget by $75,000 to $80,000, with the hopes that we were going to get a grant from the federal government. The grant never came. We still honored the overtime cut that we're running with currently now, and it's razor thin.
Martha? I'm going to basically support what Mike has said, which is, you know, when I often I'll hear from people, they'll say, well, you know, why don't you just stop doing all that stuff you don't have to do and just do the stuff you have to do, like the roads and the sheriff's office. And I said, well, actually, those are the things that we aren't mandated to do. But those are the things that people see and want the service. And, you know, Peter, you know, has often come to community meetings that I've had about roads and traffic, and that's where they say, you know, can't you get a patrol car out here to do blah, blah, blah? And, you know, that's what people are asking for. So I can't support the cut either.
Any other comments or questions? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of OTR 77, which is a reduction of 75,647, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So it's 11 to 3 to 11. Mr. Ranger.
Mr. Chairman, we have a laundry list of proposals in front of us tonight, and some of the folks who are here have been here for every single budget meeting. Can I make a suggestion that regardless of how long it takes us tonight, we get through this list? Please.
You can suggest almost anything. Let me just say, from my point of view, I want to get this done, and I think the way we get that done is, I noticed that there are some dual requests for the sake. They're too new for HSC, for example. One is 50, one is 35, and I think, you know, that the process could hurry a little bit. But I certainly want to give everyone due respect. But you know, I also don't think that we have to stay here until 11:30. Yeah.
Well, the point I'm making is it's 6 o'clock already. And we've done, what, two items?
Just two.
And one new.
One and a half.
Okay.
I think we shouldn't cut it off just because we haven't gone through this list.
Well, we're not going to cut it off.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping you would say.
And I will do my best to move the meeting along, and I indulge all of you to join me in that effort.
Oh, I have the utmost confidence in you, Jim.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Okay. Martha Dooley, couple of news. One is $50K for human service agencies, HSC agencies. Dooley is HSC 35. How you all want to do that?
I would love to ask for 50 on this, but I'm a little more of a realist than that, so I will make a motion for 35 and then hope that I can get to explain it.
Is there a second? Nathan? Okay. A new motion for 35 to Human Service Agencies.
Point of order, what are we talking about? Which
it's number 1, 2, 3, or 4 on the list on the paper. Human Service Agencies? Human Service Coalition Agency.
Oh, okay, thank you.
It's not OTR because they didn't ask for an OTR. Okay. So after our first round in the budget presentations, I went to Kathy Schlatter and I said, why didn't you ask for any OTRs? Because I know how close to the bone the human service agencies operate, and
For example, every 2 years they do a salary and benefits survey, and this is the most recent one, 2009. And based on my reading of this, there are a number of agencies that we fund where a number of these positions are not living wage positions anymore because they've been cutting salary. Basically, sort of the theme has been that they cut salary, cut hours, whatever, to try to preserve health insurance because that is so important to staff, and it's sort of the only thing that they can offer when people, and I'll tell you, the people who, when positions come across the Human Services Coalition listserv, I always look at, you know, they want somebody with a master's and 3 years experience, and they offer $25,000 or maybe $30,000 for that position, that experience. So I know how how much a dollar, how far a dollar travels in with the agencies. So I asked Kathy, what if we, you know, provided another chunk of money to go back to, I'm not all the way better either, Dolly, try to go back to the review panel, HSC's review panel, to distribute to, in the same way, basically, that they distribute, allocate the funds for the basic request. And she said, well, it really will make... will make a big difference. And basically they asked, they didn't ask for OTRs, they were sort of counseled by the review board that it's a tough year, you know, there's no money. So there actually were initially requests for more than $67,000 in OTRs from the agencies to the review board. And the review board chose not to pass any of those on to us. So, on to Joe. So, I think that they're being way too conservative and modest, and I think that they damage the basic infrastructure of providing the human services that we rely on them for. So, that's my pitch. If Kathy has anything to add, I'd invite her to come to the mic.
Let me go ahead, Kathy. Go ahead.
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is we ask agencies for the request before you meet and set the target, before this year, before they knew what they got in state aid. So a lot of people, when they gave us their request, didn't even know what was going to happen. And since then, a number of agencies have taken really serious hits to their budget. OARs lost almost two-thirds of their budget that they hadn't anticipated when we asked for them to give the request. Alternatives lost their AmeriCorps. They're down to one person to try to do all those tax returns. So there are a lot of agencies. There are a number of them that this would be a big help and would, you know, barely put them back to where they were last year. And these agencies are laying off staff. This is, you know, I think OAR lost 8 people. So so anything that could do would be a big help to the agencies.
Thanks, Kathy. Frank. And then Carol.
Thanks, Jim. Kathy, stay there for a second, please. My recollection is when we heard the original presentations, not the, it was expanded budget, but the departments and agencies were coming to explain the budget. We were getting into this, August group was getting into deciding which of the agencies should have an increase or not. And my recollection was that a couple of us, myself included, said, why don't we just give the coalition an additional chunk of money and let you worry about sprinkling it out over the agencies that needed the most. We weren't talking about a specific dollar amount back then, but, I mean, $35,000 is on the table right now. But I want to remind the board that we've had one other new thing happen in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and Brenda brought it to our attention at the Health Committee, Health and Human Services Committee. The state, in its wisdom, has enacted an additional reduction of 1.1%, and some of the very agencies that go through the coalition are going to be affected by that reduction, just like our health department is. And some of these, I believe I'm correct in saying that all of those agencies never received the notification of that. Kathy happened to pick it up on a listserv or on a website someplace. So I'm not sure if the dollar amount is correct, but I just want to remind the board that it's it probably would be in keeping to give them a few extra bucks to do what it is that we're hearing they need to do, because there's an additional hit coming to these agencies that nobody was even aware of.
Right, a lot of them hadn't gotten letters yet, but almost all of them have state contracts that will be affected by the 1.1%.
Have any of them received official notification yet, Kath?
Nancy, had any of them received? Yeah, so they're starting to trickle in. Maybe one or two when we first asked them, but love letters are starting to trickle into some agencies.
Because I know we talked at the Health Committee about having Joe and Brenda draft a letter that will go to the state expressing our frustration again.
Right, because you're required to do the work.
You
can't cut what you do 1.1%. You have to voucher for it after the work is done. They will just send you 1.1% less of your contract.
The thing that I wanted to say, though, about the dollar amount, Kathy, I might support this now, but I might want to reserve, see how everything else plays out here on the budget. I know you'd like as much as you can possibly get, because it would make life a lot easier, but is there a dollar amount below which it really isn't going to make any difference? Do you know what the effect of that 1.1% cut will be on the agencies that are affected?
You know, I don't know that figure yet. We'd have to do a lot more digging to get that number.
Okay. Thank you. Carol. Thank you.
Yeah, I found some of the figures that I had been referring to before. The action we just took on the last department was on a department that we had asked to take a 0.1% cut in their target. The Human Services Coalition from the main budget book had been asked to take a 9% cut.
Excuse me.
From last year.
What are you talking about? The first thing that you read.
The sheriff's department was asked in our target budget, in their base budget, took a 0.1%. This is from the.
The county administrator has a puzzled. The county administrator has a puzzled look on his face. So I'm not going to let that fly by as accurate, okay?
Well,
but get to your other thing, would you please?
Okay, so Frank is pointing out the effect of an additional 1.1% hit to the Human Services Agencies. Our own budget has asked them to take a 9% hit, and I haven't had time to calculate the numbers that we'd be restoring, but I think it brings them back into around a 5 or 6%. Cut, if we restore $35,000.
Carol, do you have a question?
No. I'm just going to support this because it restores some of their 9% cut.
Please,
and
go.
I'm further making the argument that that my colleagues should understand the size of the hit that we asked our Human Services Coalition agencies to take this year.
Martha.
Very quickly, we heard from Social Services how much the caseloads have been going up, and that's one reason the mandates are up. So these are the same clients that these agencies serve. And looking in the big book, page 141, the summary statement of their, going back to 2007, their total funding and request in 2011 is only $20,000 more than what they got in 2007. So basically, they're back to 2007's budget at this point, and I really think that this is somewhere our money would be wisely spent.
Brian,
I'd like to call the question.
Is there a second to calling the question, Frank? All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed.
Oh,
that got. We're still on the main motion. Pat, go ahead.
I just wonder if you or Kevin or someone can remind me of how to read that information up on the wall up there in terms of
Where do we stand right now in terms of what we voted to restore? Is it that 7.93% or the 6.90?
It's, Pat, the numbers on the left are tax rates. If you look at the numbers on the right, that's the tax levy. So you can see that we began with a 5% tax levy, and we're currently at 6.01%. And again, because of the decline in the tax base, the tax rate effect is larger. So the focus is on the 5% that was provided to the legislature. It's now up to 6.01%.
Sorry, there is information above that. There it is. I hide that because I'm working down near the bottom. So.
Any other questions or comments about this request? 35,000 new money, restoration to HSC. Are we ready to vote on this? All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that passes 9-5. Robertson Kiefer, OTR 21, Office for the Aging, change to Target. I think that this is the one that was a mistake in the original budget. Am I correct in assuming?
What happened to 013?
I'm sorry?
What happened to?
Didn't I say 013?
No.
It's Cooperative Extension.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am. Yeah, 013, Cooperative Extension, Restoration to Target, Dooley is a sponsor, 27275, Maintenance of Effort at 3% cut instead of 6.9. Dooley?
That's what I'd like to move.
And a second, Will?
The Cooperative Extension, as you've heard multiple times already in these meetings, does things we want to have done and does them cheaper than we can do them because they don't have the fringe benefits that we have to pay if we do them directly. Their connection with Cornell helps in that regard. And I guess I would, rather than me trying to talk, I'd like to ask Ken Schlatter to talk about this.
Go ahead, Ken.
I'm sorry to disrupt your lap full.
Yeah, we, originally when we were first, when we first were having these meetings with Joe, we had indicated that, we've been taking cuts in the past couple of years, and we had, and as have other organizations, we'd indicated that we could take a 3% cut. This 27,000 is the difference between the 3% cut that we had projected we could take and the 6.9% cut that we got, that everybody got. Obviously, as you know, things have changed too with what we also received, and part of the reason that we had put this money in, or we had made the OTR in the first place, is because we had projected that we would probably end up seeing significant cuts from through department contracts, which, as you know, we've seen. And in addition, essentially the way it works out, because of the funding that we get from the state, as well as the money that we get from the county, every time we get a cut from the county funding, it's compounded by a state funding cut. So in addition to that 1.1% cut that we have for state contracts, which we also received, we also see about a one-to-one match. So for every $50,000 of cuts that we see from the county, we see another $50,000 from the state. And so at this point, I think I presented at the beginning when I did my presentation, we were looking at a county our total county contracts and appropriations is about $1.5 million. And the combined losses brought it down to about $1.1 million. There's been some reinstatement through the county of services contracts, which we are grateful for. But the fact is that we're still looking at significant cuts. And in fact, I would say that this really isn't an M&E, a maintenance of effort request here. This is basically keeping one of our senior staff positions. We would have to lay off one of our senior staff program positions if this money isn't reinstated.
Peterson.
Let's see. Dooley made a comment that indicated that, if I understood it right, that if we do this, we in the county are going to have to reproduce the service that's lost and pay more for it because of this fringe thing. Is that right? Are we going to actually have to? What will be, put it this way, what will be the net effect? Exactly what services will we lose if this is not passed, if this is not restored?
There is no service that is being, currently, I don't know how to answer that question except to say that what will end up happening with this, we're not going to cut a program, we're going to cut a person, we're going to cut a senior staff position, and that senior staff position it handles one of six program areas, which is environment, agriculture, family and community development, 4-H youth development, and so on. The net effect in the short term, next year you won't see a change in services from that position, except that there's a person who's not working in those particular program areas who writes proposals, who brings in other money, who does things that the county asks us to do.
Thanks. Martha.
Ken, the total is a little over $27,000. I'm sure that's not the salary of a senior staff person.
Double it.
You're saying because the state then would cut.
And the fact is that we're already, you're right, even 27 doubled would cover a senior staff position practically. Because it's about $55,000 for a senior staff position. But in addition, the fact is that we would, normally we would stretch to pay more. So, in fact, we're already stretching to pay. We're already going to dig into reserves to keep people on board. If we lost this, it's basically just not worth it for us to keep digging into reserves to keep that position. In other words, if we lose this target, we're looking at, or long term, what's happening, and we can't continue to pay out of reserves to cover the cost of that position. In other words, we're looking at we might have to dig in for $5,000 this year if we didn't see this, if we saw this come in, which we can cover. But if we're losing, double this number plus the $5,000, that would be paying $60,000 or $65,000 out of reserves, and we can't afford that.
Anyone else? Will?
Yeah, I'm going to support this. I, along with Dave, have the pleasure of sitting on the Cooperative Extension Board, and month after month being astounded at the value that is delivered to us, and sort of the economic benefits that grow out of our local foods efforts and our nutrition efforts. It is just amazing what Cooperative Extension does. Peter, you asked whether, if this disappears, will we have to do it other way? I don't think it's a dollar. I don't think we're dealing with a mandate, but we're doing the classic case where doing work that our community needs through Cooperative Extension is greatly leveraged through the fact that Cornell picks up the benefits piece. And I will very enthusiastically support this motion.
I think we're ready to vote on this. All in favor of the 013-27-025 MOE, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. It fails. It's a 7-7 vote. Yes?
I'd like to move it as one time, and with the idea that this might be the sort of case where we'll help them phase out of that position. Maybe that person can write grants to cover their salary.
Is there a second? Second. Will, do we need discussion? All in favor of moving this as one time, please raise your hand. Same amount of money. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five. 9-5 it passes. Magic of one time. I'm going to add something right here, another new thing for assessment. And I don't have any information on it other than some things from... I don't want to read this whole sheet.
Just read the dollar amount and ask you.
Okay, additional funding, $59,706. And I would like to have Jay explain the details. Does someone want to move it? Or Joe?
Can I give a little preface before Jay gets up? And this is a very difficult situation because of its timing. We learned about, I want to say 48 hours ago, it was in fact last, I think, Thursday, of a state aid formula that will affect assessment, and it will cost them about $60,000. In fact, it will cost them more than $60,000. And it was just a matter of getting details on that as this process is happening. So we've struggled internally to figure out whether we should bring it to you now to adjust the budget, knowing what we now know, adjust the budget for 2011, and use one-time money to do that, and I'll explain why in just a second, or whether we should just come back next year and draw out a contingency. And we think it's better to get it out there right now to let you know that there has been an aid setback of more than $60,000 that we hope to bridge with a $60,000 one-time item. Jay can explain, I think, concisely why it is that the aid formula is going to change. It relates to the cycle of reassessments. And what we will find is that we are on an odd-even year system now, where in odd years, such as 2011, we will experience low aid. In even years, we will experience higher levels of aid. So what I'm suggesting is that we basically plug the gap in 2011 with one-time money, knowing that in 2012, aid is going to be available that will really take that one-time money out and replace it with state aid. And then we'll have to think about what to do in 2013 when we go back to the down cycle in state aid. So, again, I apologize for bringing this to you very late. We've been struggling with the best way to do it. But it would result, if you accept this, in the addition of $60,000 of one-time money to put into the 2011 budget.
Jay? Is there anything?
Go or Frank question first?
Oh, go ahead.
Jay or Joe, while it's state aid, what part of assessment will this aid be funding? And are there any... is there any personnel attached to what we're doing that would require that we retain personnel that might have been put in the cut that you had to come up with in order to meet your 6.9%? Long question, Jay.
Yeah, well, and I have a couple different ways of going at this answer. So I'll start with a generic why the state changed their formula and get down to how it affects my budget. The state of New York, in their infinite wisdom, as I told you during my budget presentation, decided to change the annual reassessment aid program to a cyclical reappraisal aid program. And you can look at that acronym, and that pretty much sums up what this new program is.
Circumloquacious, perhaps?
It's not to encourage quality assessing or to have municipalities keep assessments up to date and therefore distribute the tax burden equitably. it's really self-serving on their goal, is to try to encourage assessment jurisdictions to do a reappraisal once every 4 years, give them a couple dollars in those interim years. And if they do a reappraisal once every 4 years, the state doesn't have to go in and reappraise that municipality for the purposes of equalization. So for the state, they can give a little bit extra money and not have to spend money on appraisers in their office going through and doing full market value measurements is what they call it. So it's very self-serving on their part. They're doing less with less. And how it affects our budget, in our annual reassessment program, we count on what was $5 per parcel, which is $151,000 and some change. The state last year, after we did our budget, dropped it by 2%, dropped it by 12.5%, and just last week they dropped it again about 10%. So what was $5 per parcel this year is going to be $4 per parcel, this year being 2010. So with the new change in assessment aid program, we'll get $5 in years of reappraisal, $2 in those off years. Now, they've changed the term of what reappraisal means, and that means you have to view every parcel from the public right-of-way or from your desktop, even if values don't change. And through some sort of statistical analysis, if you have a pool of sales and those compare favorably to your assessments, they're right on, we're not going to waste our time and go out and revalue that neighborhood. You know, it's very indicative of that neighborhood not changing. But the state's persuading you to do so in order to get that $5 per year in state aid. So we took a look at what's the best way for us to maximize state aid and still try to keep an up-to-date assessment roll as possible. So the first case scenario would be to just not go after any state aid and just keep with our current annual reassessment program. So we would lose our $139,000 in state aid per year. Over a two-year period, that's $278,000 that I'd have to come to you and ask for. You know, being a department that deals with the public on a daily basis and how they feel about increasing taxes, I'm not going to come here and ask for $278,000. Another way to do it is to try to achieve that $139,000 each year in state aid. In order for us to do that and meet those guidelines, which also includes remeasuring every single building on a property once every 6 years, or at least the two most complex sides. My house doesn't grow. It seems like the things inside of it grow and multiply, but the house doesn't. The outside structure doesn't.
Is that a personal assessment?
Well, yeah, this does too, but it's just a waste of time. It's a requirement that I can see for some local assessing jurisdictions. But where there's a continual staff in our office that maintains records, we have a great working relationship with the towns, buildings don't just grow slightly. They grow largely, and we have building permits for that. So it's impossible to do a cyclical reappraisal every year. If we were to do that, we would require two additional real property appraisers that are currently unfunded and are under our target budget. So our 2011 budget, we will have to lay off two real property appraisers. You could fund them, but that's $146,000 over a two-year period. That's me coming to you for $292,000. You going to open up your pocketbooks, Frank?
Well, the question I have is, in order to achieve the cycle that the state wants you to achieve, are you still going to need those two people, even if they're doing it by desktop?
No, if we were to do an every other year, which is what I'm proposing and what the $60,000 covers, we can maximize that state aid of $2 in 1 year, $5 in the next year, having a two-year window to do a reappraisal, we can get that work done with the staffing that we have in our under-target budget.
The rhetorical question is, and Joe was kind in saying, on the odd year we'll get one thing, on even years we're going to get something else. The state's reduced your reimbursement from $5 to $4 by ratcheting it down. We're seeing the same thing with STOA and TCAT. How assured, and I'm sure you don't know the answer to this, how assured are you that the state's not going to ratchet the $4 down by the time they're ready to pay it?
Well, it's kind of discouraging when I talked to representatives of the Office of Real Property Tax Services. They said whenever you look at state aid, look at it as a windfall. Never include it into your budget. Well, $140,000 in my budget isn't a windfall. You know, it's something that provides us that to real property appraisers to do our work. You know, there are no guarantees in life, and there's definitely no guarantees in state aid. So.
Let me make a comment here. We have no resolution on the floor, and if I would certainly like to get a vote on this, not just talk about it. We can talk about it after we get a resolution.
Move the 60
or 59706
to accomplish what Joe has described.
It's one time.
I'm sorry.
It's one time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there a second? Martha, second. Okay. Someone had their hand up, Martha.
What's
Mike.
The actual amount?
The actual amount? I'm looking at a sheet that's $59,706.
Yeah. Correct.
So that'll be for 2011, and then in 2012 you say we'll get that back in state aid.
Correct.
And so for 2013 we'd be looking at another, we should fill that gap, because in other words, you can't hire somebody every other year.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike.
I'm going to support this because it's one time. I certainly hope that the GO committee, I don't know whether they can do it this year or next year, begins to take a careful look at what we're doing in the assessment department. I've never felt that the annual reassessment was sustainable. What brought it to bear, of course, was the state aid, which basically surfaced after the huge monumental increases in the filing fees for assessment forms on real property transactions. We know we've been understaffed in the assessment department for them to do what needs to be done with annual reassessment, and I think that all needs to be reexamined next year.
Someone had their hand up over here. Peter, did you?
Yes, I did. I must confess, I don't follow what you're saying. I wonder if you could repeat it in a simple.
Is anyone shocked by that?
I'm sure it's my fault, but I couldn't follow it. If this passes, what's going to happen? How will the services differ if this passes from if it's defeated, and financially? What's going to be the impact to the county if this passes or is defeated?
If this is defeated, it'll end up costing the county significantly more money than $60,000. If this is defeated, we would not be able to do an every other year reappraisal. We would end up having to do maybe a four-year cycle. And then in that fourth year, as values get way out of line, hiring more staff to deal with the complaints and dealing with actually going out and revaluing these properties. If we keep values up to date on an every other year cycle, we can maintain that staffing level we have now and continue the work. Nothing's going to change from the service we provide for our 2010 roll to our 2011 roll. With this change to our budget.
Okay, then, you know, it's an argument I've heard often here that if we don't spend this money, we're going to end up in worse financial situation than if we do spend the money. And the arguments for that, while well-intentioned, are sort of theoretical or just in people's, I mean, no one's actually sat down and figured out exactly how many dollars is it going to cost us to reject it. But I gather you're giving me an argument that is not that theoretical. You've actually figured out that it's going to cost us less by adding up columns of numbers.
If we were to hold off and go back to the 10-year cyclical reassessment program we did in 1970, 80, 90, and 2000, if we were to reduce our staffing, we couldn't do it in-house. We would have to contract that out with a reappraisal company. That's at least $100 per parcel. We have 35,000 parcels of real property in Tompkins County. That's $3.5 million.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Julie.
I think this is one of the most appalling things I've seen the state do recently, and there have been a whole bunch of things they've been doing. This seems to have been totally under the radar. I haven't seen it covered anywhere. The state has been saying for a long time it's important to do annual assessment, and Tompkins County is doing it right. And the gubernatorial candidates seem to think combining municipalities, taxing jurisdictions makes sense. It certainly makes sense in terms of assessment to have it be countywide. And what ORPS has done now as part of being combined with the Department of Taxation and Finance is to totally throw in the towel, apparently, on how to do assessment right. And I hope that somebody does a good expose of this. It just needs good coverage. I am so appalled. Jay, I hope maybe you'll write it up and submit it somewhere, under a pen name, perhaps.
These guidelines were under the emergency rule procedure from Tax and Finance. They haven't gone out for public opinion or comment. From what I've heard, this will cover 2011 and 2012.
What is the emergency?
State doesn't have the people to do their work, and they want to cut down on the money they're giving to local assessing jurisdictions.
Brian.
I'm going to try this again. I'd like to call a question.
Is there a second? Will, all in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. It's unanimous. Okay, the question is being called back to the original motion. It's $59,706 in one time to the assessment department budget. All in favor of that, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? 1, 2. It passes 12 to 2.
Thank you.
Now, I'm 021, Office of the Aging, change to target 21375. I have Robertson Kiefer. Who wants to do it? I would suggest you, Martha. Julie's voice is better.
I'll move it.
Is there a second? Frank? I'm sorry. You want discussion. Why are we doing this? Go ahead.
Yeah, I understand that this was intended to be requested as target. And had Joe, he told us that during the COFA presentation, had it been coded that way, Joe would have approved it that way. And I want to check with Joe on that. But this is Lisa's top priority, and you know, it's for food for seniors.
It's food net.
Food net. So Joe, is there something you want
no,
to add?
No, that's absolutely right, and it would actually cause COFA to overspend their rollover. So this is really realigning things the way they should be. So it was an error, and this would correct that error.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, Brian.
Can I just ask, never mind. This doesn't have anything to do with the next one, then?
No.
Okay, never mind.
All in favor of this motion, please raise your hand.
Which one is it?
I'm sorry, Kathy. Is 021 changing to target 21375? Appreciate it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 14 opposed. No, nobody, no one's opposed. 14's up. Next one. 025, Office of the Aging, change to target $5,000. Dooley?
Well, this is the last resort home repair. It's needed every year. It's not going to be needed less in the coming year. And to do it as one time seems foolish, since it's something we're going to have to keep doing. So that's why I'd like to move it to target.
Okay. Did we have a second? I need a second. Frank, you're a second? Okay. Any further discussion, questions, comments? Martha?
I'd like to ask Lisa, is this the only funding for this, and is it usually requested as one time?
excuse me. Usually we have other sources of funding for this. The RAP program is federal funding that gets passed through to us, and there was and some of that funding goes toward a staff salary, and others the remainder of that funds go into what we call last resort home repair fund. This year there's been a cut to that federal funding, so in order to sustain the staff position, it all went into the position. And also, we do apply for outside grants, Restore grant being one of them. We've gotten the last 3 out of 4 years. We were just notified that we didn't receive Restore funding. So basically, whatever funds are in this last resort fund, we kind of use as seed money or leveraging funds to draw down other funds through other funding sources. And therefore, for low-income seniors, for home repairs, usually emergency home repairs, and usually for home repairs that are not funded through any other funding stream. For instance, repairs to mobile homes often fall into this category.
Carol Pat.
Lisa, can you tell me anything about how you integrate with or not, or how it overlaps or not, with the other weatherization and home repair programs that are available, for example, through Better Housing or TCA or INHS?
Yes, our home repair coordinator works hand-in-hand with all of those local agencies. Better Housing, INHS, TCA, Sheen Housing, and the USDA Rural Development for fundings. So basically, when there's large items that need to be funded, large repairs, not one agency can usually fund the cost of the repair. We usually have to look for a patchwork of funding through various agencies, and it depends upon the type of repair, what one agency will fund versus another. So it works hand in hand with all of those agencies. But we really screen and assist the seniors in filling out the applications, but we work with other agencies to get the work done.
Frank, and then Will.
I just want to remind the board that just in rereading the descriptive paragraph, this deals with principally folks that are in situations with that could be regarded as adult protective emergency response, and there's a comment here about. The category of individuals are not just that they're low-income seniors, it's that a lot of these folks are in mobile homes, and there may be code violations that are that they're exposed to if this work isn't done. This goes back, I think, to the comment we heard about Catholic Charities, the last resort list. This is really with all due respect, this is really just a small amount of money to preserve the ability to deliver the service. And I would encourage you to support it.
Actually, Will, I have to put Pat in and then you.
Is there a relationship between the work that we do through this program? Does it make it possible in some cases for people to stay in their homes as opposed to having to, say, go into a nursing home or some other facility?
Absolutely. The work that's done, I mean, the outreach worker from our office is going in to assess the individuals, you know, the home situation, and taking a holistic view not only of the built environment but also of the situation that the individual is in, and sometimes can be a critical link to other services like FoodNet or home care services. Sometimes those are already in place. But, yes, this does provide, in some instances, the means for a person to remain in their home independently.
So just as a follow-up in relation to your last question, Peter, there seems to be a pretty direct connection here, I would say, at least in some cases, between the cost of the home repair versus the cost of, say, a nursing home.
Might I call for a vote on this, would you all? Sure. All in favor of adding this from one time to target, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. 10-4 passes. Again, Office of the Aging and Restoration, $10,827. It is 027. Sponsor, Dooley Kiefer. Oh, by the way, unless you have a viral infection, please don't come to any microphones around the room.
Okay.
We're only looking for people with bad voices. Come on.
I need to ask a question about this. My reading of our budget book suggests that this was a cut to 0.4 FTE and from 0.6. And in my opinion, we should keep people at a minimum of 0.5 FTE so they qualify for some benefits. And so rather than moving it at 10,000, whatever it is, I would like to move it at half of that number, which would be 5,000 something. Someone can help me.
So is there a second to that? We don't have a motion on the floor. So you're actually changing it from 10,827 to one half of that.
5,414.
And 13, or whatever, 17, 16, 15. Is there a second? Martha?
With a question?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Lisa, so is this person is currently at 60%?
Yes, 3 days a week.
3 days a week. Okay. I mean, we did this before that where there was a position that was just under half-time in terms of qualifying for benefits. So does this 54 would go to salary? I guess there's a question for Joe.
The simple question for me is, and if I may interrupt, what does this do to what? If you don't get 10,827, what does 5,000 do for you?
It's a PERS outreach week worker.
I'm sorry?
A PERS outreach worker.
So it would essentially reduce a person from 3 days a week to 2.5 days a week. The position would still be eligible for benefits. Half-time.
And now, Martha, you asked Joe. Is that what you wanted to know?
Yeah. Do we need to add anything for those benefits, or does that come out in the wash?
They're already getting benefits.
Right. Okay.
Wait.
Carol?
Yeah. Wait. I'm not understanding why we're not keeping this up at the 10,827.
Well, I think Dooley
amended to that if you want.
She amended it.
I guess I would like to amend it, but first I'd like to understand why. I didn't understand why you reduced it.
I'm trying to be collegial.
Okay. Well, unlike the last one with it, I thought there were other agencies that are set up to handle this. I think this one should be handled by Office for the Aging, and I would kind of like to see it stay up at the 10,827, so I'd like to amend it to that.
Is there a second to our amendment? The seconder? Is that friendly to you?
Sure, we'll have it vote. Go for vote there.
Yeah, discussion. Now it is now up to what you see on the paper, 10,827, target 027. Comments on that? I read a vote on that. All in favor of the restoration of 10,827 on 027?
This would just be to amend the motion. And then it would be that we'd have to vote on the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Well, I was going to cover them all in one vote.
Oh, right, I'm sorry.
No.
Yes.
I don't have to vote on an amendment, right? It was.
Right, no, it's right. Now the main motion, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Point of order.
Why? Go ahead.
Does this mean we're not going to have the opportunity then to vote on the original? Motion.
Not now, no.
You can introduce it after the original.
It went from 5,000 to 10,000.
Yeah. If it fails, somebody can reintroduce it.
And then you can go back to 5 or 0 or whatever. All in favor of the 10,827 figure, raise your hand, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and opposed. It should be 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That failed. Will?
Move it to 5.
Is there a second? Pat? Do we need to talk about this?
This is target, right?
Right.
And actually, it was actually 5, 4.
Yeah, it's half of 10,827.
Right, whatever that is.
And I'll throw in the other dollar so it's an even number.
Thank you.
All in favor of the 5,000 and change, please raise your hand. Target 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed 12-2. It's in at 5. Robertson Kiefer Mental Health Restoration to target 43,335, supervising psychologist. It is 062 on your program. Mm-hmm. Someone want to move it? Mm-hmm. Dooley? Second? Martha? Discussion. Go ahead.
I called Betsy this afternoon to learn some more about this. And so this would be for half of the original request was for 86,670 net of revenue, because this position would bring in considerable revenue. You can see on page 47, it's almost 44,000 in revenue. So so this would be for half time and then net of revenue. So the person would bring in, the salary and fringe would be about 65,000, and the revenue would be almost 22. So the net is 43. Betsy mentioned to me that there are things that this position, this person would do, that there is nobody else to do these things. It's supervision of the children's clinic, and in particular, psychological testing and evaluation for diagnostic purposes. And that through the clinic restructuring that's been going on for a number of years, directed by the state, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that the rate that would be reimbursed, that this service would be reimbursed, is now currently $196 per evaluation, and it's about to go to $320 per evaluation. So it seems to me this is a business we ought to be in, that this is something that would provide a really critical service
to the children in our county, and the revenue would be significantly, you know, would significantly offset the cost of the service. And I just want to say I don't usually like to tell personal stories about why I'm for something or against something or whatever, but in another state, my brother's child has had severe mental health problems for the last 2 years, and the family is going through such a crisis for 2 years, such a battle, because mental health is not considered, you know, serious. The services don't exist. The, you know, if you go, you know, the options aren't there. There's one hospital in the state that does what they need. The reimbursements aren't there. You know, the health insurance is just tapped out, and it's an enormous crisis. It's a young woman who's 18 and cannot be left alone, and she's in and out of hospitals, and this is just as severe, just as important as children's cancer or leukemia or anything else. And I feel strongly that this is the kind of thing that if we can provide the services in our community, then families have a little bit better shot at staying together, staying whole, and, you know, maybe the kids getting better. And if we can, this is the children's services, and it's so critical, because if you can stave off a lifetime of mental health problems, it really matters.
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Martha on all but one item. I would direct you to, if you haven't had a chance to review it, go to page 47. Betsy and I have talked a couple of times over the last 3 weeks, and I've retrieved similar information to what Martha has laid out. The part that I disagree with is that I think this position ought to be restored to its full dollar amount. I think we ought to go to the whole 86 and change. The reason being, the type of service that this individual performs, and I think Martha's description is accurate, the type of service that they perform or this individual would perform is so critical in this particular area that I don't think we can afford not to do this and have this person on full time. It's really a need in our community. As much as you'd like to know that everything is hunky-dory in the perfect city, in the perfect state, it isn't. And a lot of these kids really do need the support as well as the families. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we increase his position to full-time and go for, I'd like to change the number to $86,670.
There's the
That's
seconder?
Friendly to me.
It's fine with you. Okay.
And
who had their hand up? Dooley, you had your hand up.
I did. When we had the presentation from the mental health representatives, it was clear that they can't fill this position. They can't find someone to fill it. Good PhD psychologists like to keep a private practice. And so they felt and told us that if they could advertise it as half-time, they can probably fill it and get someone good. And I found that persuasive.
I think, that's what I remember also. Peter and Mike.
I've heard that statement several times before, and I accept it, but I wonder why, if you want to restore it to full-time, you don't ask for two half-time people for the same dollar and the same output.
Hold on a second. I'm being advised by my advisor that
I had moved it. I didn't accept it as friendly.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
An amendment, and someone else seconded it, and that's okay.
Yeah. Now I need a second and to it, and I have that, Mark. Okay, thank you. The parliamentarian is
Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, perhaps Betsy can address.
Yeah, let me go to Mike and
or
then.
John.
So we're speaking of the amendment, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and I can't support the amendment at 86,000. I was going to support the lower amount based on the presentation we had from the department people here, which I think they made a good case. I think they explained it. I think they explained why they could do with less. I think Dooley has recited those reasons, but I don't think we should go to the full amount.
Can we ask John and or Betsy to address the whether it can be filled by two halftime people, or maybe remind us what the presentation really did describe?
Well, you just have done that. Who do you want?
Who would like to jump up at the microphone? The one who has a voice.
So,
as a team?
I would say the original full-time job, when we had a full-time person, did this function of testing, supervision on difficult cases on adults and on kids. When she retired, cut back her hours, she concentrated on children, didn't do much with adults because the children, many of whom are in difficult positions, or a lot of them, we see them in schools, their parents have a hard time even bringing them to the clinic, and they get stuck in their treatment and we need further consultation. And so we concentrated on the kids with the hours we had. If we had the 35 hours, it would go back to there. If we went back to what Dr. Sharp was doing before she retired, 20 to 25 hours, she would concentrate on kids and do a little bit with adults. And that's really where it was when she retired a couple years ago.
I guess to respond to your question, Peter, about whether you felt we could do two halftime.
Betsy, can you use the mic, please? Excuse me.
I was trying. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
It's gone out. I would imagine that if we were to have two halftime people, which, as we talked about during our session, that we may be able to find more PhDs who are willing to work halftime, that we could utilize those services, that we would probably split them up between children's services and adult services, clearly. I mean, that would be a simple designation. And then we would also have the opportunity to do more evaluations. I think that would be a reasonable compromise. Actually, it's not a compromise because then we'd be getting the full funding. That would be wonderful. We would also do a pretty significant search, working with our personnel department to look throughout the state.
Just a follow-up question.
Will actually had his hand up.
Thank you, Jim. I like the spirit of behind Peter's suggestion. I am aware, though, that we're doubling our benefits cost, and I'm just wondering. I know this comes out in the wash, but do we have any sense of what that's really worth? If we have two people half time at that rate, do we have a new way of knowing?
Well, it would be the same. It would be, we'd be looking at a cost of $130,000 as opposed to $65,000 overall.
Okay.
Although that's not net, because we are looking at a revenue of over $40,000 for a full-time person. We would cut that cut that in half. That revenue. That's how we presented the.
Think Joe, do you want to jump in here, Kevin?
No. Something else.
We're working on
Working on something else.
While he's doing that, may I ask my question?
Yeah, you may.
Betsy, if you were able to go with two halftime individuals, and one was concentrating on adult, or you could mix and match, some adult review and evaluations, and some children's,
Would the reimbursement rate under the new reimbursement scenario, the $320 an hour, would that, or per evaluation, would that still be true, or would it only be true for the person doing the child evaluations?
No, the new Medicaid reimbursement rate under clinic restructuring is $320 an hour.
Regardless
of? I mean, per session, sorry.
Per session.
Regardless of whether it's a child or an adult.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, let me just make a comment. While I may agree that it would be great to have two half-time people, the request is for one half-time person, and I would hope that we don't get lost in trying to figure out what we would do with the other half-time person. They would know what to do, but we're asking for one half-time. And let me also suggest to you that they have a deputy position that has been funded for many years, and they essentially could pay for the $43K out of that funding. So there would not need to be a target. Carol?
Yeah, my question was about that deputy commissioner line that's in their base budget on page 169, because I was just looking at that, and forgive me for not looking at it earlier and talking to you about it, but I see that that there's almost that exact same amount, $86,229, that's, I understand, a vacant position. Is there any reason why we, and I don't know what the mechanism would be, for us to just ask them to use that line rather than do it as an over-target request?
I think that's what I just said. That's what I just said.
So that we would not, but we need some mechanism to do that.
No, I don't think we do, but Joe,
so we just
go ahead.
Wouldn't do an over-target, or how would this work?
That's right. I think the way you do it is just keep the budget the way it is, because there are adequate resources to do it, and then it's the department's, if it's the department's priority to put that money behind the supervising psychologist, they would, or if they choose if they decide that money is better spent with a deputy, they could do that too, so that keeps all their options open.
Well, I would both like to give them the opportunity to comment on what whether this would work for them, and to ask how this would fit in with the policy we just passed, or we're discussing a policy whereby they would not, if there's a vacant position, they would not just be able to switch it to another kind of position. They would have to come back to you.
Well, they have to come back to me to fill any vacant position, so I have to sign off on that. The policy change that was made the other night was related to rollover and savings that occur during the current fiscal year, and what happens to those savings in terms of can they be applied in future years. So the department still have the latitude to put that money behind that psychologist position next year.
Okay, so now could we ask the department to comment?
Go ahead.
We realize that we have the internal opportunity to make that change. One of the reasons why the deputy position has been in our budget and not funded is, well, two reasons. We are loath to take that out of the budget because we are hoping that we can fill it at some point in time. But because our management / supervision staff, we keep tightening it and tightening it and tightening it, and we don't have any more room. We look at the supervising psychologist as a very essential piece to bring back into our supervising team, and hoping that we will be able to generate enough funds to fill a deputy position. You know, that's not necessarily a revenue-generating position, whereas a supervising psychologist is. If we were to keep the if we were to use the deputy commissioner position and use that money to fill the supervising psychologist, it becomes a wash. It's not boosting, it's not enhancing our current target. And we would like that to bring it up a level so that we are able to generate more revenue. John, do you want to add to that?
I guess Well, if it were 3 months ago, Bob would be here, and he could sort of run through it. But to be candid, a lot of departments have deputies, and I think our commissioner has done the work of two people, and he often, our community services board and others have pushed for him to fill the position, and he's refused to help maintain the budget hole. And at this point, he may not be able to do the work of two. He may have to settle for doing the work of one, and I'd hate to wipe that position out of the budget. I'd like to give him the option when he returns to maybe fill this position, which does exist. And that's, to be honest, now that's one thing we have to think about.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Folks, don't overlook, I can't help, but I don't want us to overlook what the mental health department is going through at the state request. Those of us that have been on the health committee for the last year and a half have heard from time to time about the clinic restructuring, and it's a major, major shift in what they're going through. My understanding is that part of that restructuring involves this supervising psychologist as far as responsibility is concerned. Not doing everything, but there is a piece that this individual has to participate in. Is that true, Betsy?
Well, as part of our supervising team. Yeah. And also, as we brought up before, we look at one of the key responsibilities is to be supervision of the children's program, which as we described during our presentation, John is doing as much work as he can with supervising that unit. But we have a lot of funds out there. We're getting Clinic Plus money from Office of Mental Health on the state level. And, you know, we need to do a certain level of screening and assessment out in the schools and working with the psychiatric social workers that are out there at the schools. So we need to have a strong unit there in order to maintain that funding level.
Any other comments? Pat, I'm sorry, go ahead.
My question is, how long have both of those positions been vacant? And then depending on the answer to that, I may have a follow-up question.
Okay. I'll try not to make this too long, but I've been with the department for 6 years, and at that time, our interim commissioner was Bob DeLuca, who was our deputy before that. So there's been no one in that position for 6 years. However, we also have had a clinic director and a continuing day treatment director, and there have been a number of other positions at that level, our management level, that we've been sort of lopping off our budget year after year. I say that because...
So is it the case that the funding has been in the budget that entire 6 years for this position, and that hasn't been filled?
Yes.
Okay, and how long has the supervising psychologist position been open?
For a year. Dr. Sharp retired in 2007 and then came back to us working on a contract.
I guess I would just say then that I think I would feel that the argument for funding that's on the table right now that we're being asked to vote on would be much more compelling for me had the funding that was already in the budget been used, and the department was then coming back to us to ask to make that funding up because they now needed to fill the other position. But given that this has been vacant and the funding has been there for 6 years, it seems to me that this could have been filled.
Peter, go ahead.
I guess I would respond that what you say is an accurate observation. However, we haven't had, and the money's been in the budget, but because of the way we're more of a business model, so we're looking at all that revenue coming in. I don't think we haven't felt flush enough to fill that position. It's very tight year after year after year. And that's one of the reasons why. So it's sort of, that's like been our little buffer.
Isn't it also the case, though, that you could have come back, if you had filled it, you could have come back to the legislature to ask for the money for either that position or this position, had you needed to do that?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You could do almost anything.
I'm trying to channel Bob on that one, and I can't.
Yeah. let's not do that. Peter, you had your hand up.
I really hate to prolong this, but following the old adage, follow the money, what's happened to that money, the money for that deputy supervisor for the past 6 years? Has that been accumulating in what's called rollover or what?
No.
She has an answer. David?
No.
No, but then...
Do you want to hear from the experts, Peter?
Yeah, I do.
Well, if you look at the history of the department, they have had supervisory positions that have remained unfilled, and it's part of, I would say that by keeping them unfilled, they offset on the income side from some shortfalls there, because if they don't spend the money, then it helps them balance their budget, because not every position it's not like every position can guarantee it raises money. Some of it comes from insurance fees. Very little of it comes actually from New York State in terms of like the traditional type percentage of the salary. It's mostly earned income. And so they've been very cognizant of having to watch that so they don't overspend. And it's really not overspending. They're having shortfalls on the income side, so it's offset by not filling positions.
So can you just say yes to this question? Is that whole six-year vacant position irrelevant?
Who'd you like to answer that, Peter?
I don't know. Somebody that
Well,
knows.
It may not be a very good question. I think what they managed to do, at least from my point of view, from what I just heard, they've sort of set themselves up like a quasi-enterprise operation, but they've been able to manage their department by using money when they have shortfall that unfunded things and haven't had to come back to the legislature and make specific requests. I think their management has been excellent in dealing with what they have.
Yeah, I'm not complaining, but just the question I have is if they had decided all of a sudden that they wanted to change the name of that position to supervising psychologist.
I think we decided that here. They didn't.
Could they have done that on their own without going to the legislature and just ask the county administrator?
Could they have done to move money from one position to the other?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mike. Dave, you had your hand up first. I'm sorry.
I couldn't change the title.
I'd like to call a question.
Thank you.
Is there a second? Brian. All in favor of calling a question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The question is called. We're voting on $86,000 to target for a
supervising psychologist.
The amendment.
Wait, point of information? I'm confused about how I should vote if I believe that...
Just vote with me, Carol.
If I believe that they should use the money that's in their budget for a vacant position, how do I vote?
No.
Then I vote no on this?
That. That's why you make the big money. We're voting on the amendment 86670. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand.
Does the amendment raise it to that or lower it to that to the 43?
What? No, it's 86. That's a third grade math. That's a plus. And it would be targeted.
Correct. The original motion was 43, and it got this will raise it.
That's correct.
Are we not paying attention here? I mean, all in favor of the 86-670, please raise your hand. One, two, three. Opposed? All the rest. 3-11. We are... I back to the 43 to target. Martha.
I would like to say that there's this issue of using unfilled administrative lines to sort of balance the budget when revenues don't come in as they're expected. For example, we see in the health department a similar situation where revenues especially don't come in on a cash flow basis when they're expected, and sometimes not ever. So the last several years, Bob has trimmed and squeezed. It's a very flat department in terms of supervision, and this is kind of the last place where they have this kind of a slight buffer. So using that 86 or even part of it for this psychologist would, I think, really make it extremely hard for them to just manage the cash flow and take the risk on hiring that service done. And that's why they've asked us for the money to hire the service.
Pat.
Isn't it also the case, though, that if we support the request for the 43,335, and they hire the psychologist and then decide that they do want to fill the deputy position, that our budget would be the full-time deputy position plus the half-time psychologist position?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is right now.
Right.
That's what it would be if we voted.
Whereas if we don't support this and they do take the money out of the deputy, then that would be that much less.
Right. The motion is to add 43 to the target.
Right. Okay. Motion to add 43 to target and not ask them to do it another way. Peter?
I call the question.
Is there a second? All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. The question is called 43K to the target. 062. Raise your hand, please. All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Someone didn't vote.
I didn't vote yet. Do it again. Sorry.
There are 7 in favor of the target, 6 opposed so far.
I'll vote yes on it.
Okay. You're voting yes to restore it to target?
Yes. This would be the 43.
Yeah, can we do it one more time? That makes sense. All in favor of the motion to restore 43,35 to the target, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, it's restored.
Thank you all.
Kiefer Proto, 044 Health Restoration, one time, 31761 Administrative Assistant at 5 FTE. And you can read the explanation. Someone want to move it? Mike?
No, Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yeah.
Where are we tonight? What is your intention? Are we
going to we're going to finish.
Are we going to break or what? Are we going to go till?
We're going till the end. We can break down at 7:30 if you'd like.
Can we get to vote on that?
On vote now.
Some of us actually have jobs that we're expected to go to tomorrow.
Do you get to vote on what, Kathy?
Initially, you're saying we're going to go to the end. Initially, this meeting was scheduled to start at 5:30,
and it did.
Okay. Is it going to end at 8:30 as was promised?
No.
It should. I'd like to call for a vote on that.
Okay.
Is there a motion? Is there a second?
What would be the option?
To end the meeting at 8:30. What?
What would be the option? Would we schedule another meeting?
Yeah, we'd have to. Carol? Are you seconding the motion?
No.
Okay. Okay, this is the part of the meeting where it goes awry again, and we just start talking. She has a motion. Is there a second?
For which time?
Dooley, your second?
Yes.
Okay, discussion. Kathy?
We just had a long discussion about mental health. I'd like to point out that there's physical health of the legislators and decision makers involved. Many of us went on the assumption that we would be allowed to get a normal night's sleep because the schedule that was set was that the meeting would be over at 8:30. Now, I'm certainly doing my best to keep my comments brief, and I know that my colleagues are doing their utmost to see that the meetings end on time, but I'd like for us to keep our faith with each other and with the public and in the meetings at the time that we agreed.
Peter.
I support Kathy. I think that these are important decisions and that as people get tired, the decisions get worse. So I support that.
Martha?
The problem is that I don't want to walk out and get some food or go to the bathroom when something's going on. So I sort of rely on having a break.
Dooley, you have your hand up.
Yes. The question was raised a little bit ago. If we don't finish tonight, will we have to schedule another meeting? And the answer isn't. There's more than one answer to that question. Yes, another meeting could be scheduled, or the end of this meeting, we could vote to adopt as our amended tentative budget as far as we've gotten, so that wherever we are is what goes to public hearing. We hear from the public. After the public hearing, we schedule another voting and revisiting meeting. So we have time to do it that way also.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm sick, and I really don't want to stay much longer. I'm sorry.
Martha?
Well, what we vote tonight goes to the legislature. It doesn't go directly to the public hearing. So we could make other modifications Wednesday night. It's also true, this is an expanded budget committee, which literally needs three for a quorum. So there's that, too.
Peter?
I would be happier coming back for another meeting tomorrow evening than going till Thursday.
Well, let me call the question. And Kathy's motion is on the floor in a second to end the meeting at 8:30. All in favor of doing that, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. I would support that. Opposed? And the motion is defeated, 6-8. We will have a break now. Can we do that?
How long is it? What was the vote?
6-8. What? You have 7-7?
$414.
Okay.
Yes. I voted.